Imagine that you're 10 years old. At that time in your life, you have a traumatic experience that blocks out all of the memories of the past. Though you had a normal family life up to that point, you don't remember anything before age 10. Well, this happened to our special guest here on Renewal. Today, you'll hear the beginning of her story. You'll want to stay with us all this week to fully understand her amazing journey involving both tragedy and then redemption. Here now is our host and teacher, Dr. Jean Getz.
Well, thank you very much, Alan, and it's good to be here on Renewal with a special new friend. Her name is Susan DeFace Washington. Susan, welcome to Renewal.
Thank you very much.
It's great to have you, and of course, you gave me permission to call you Susie because that kind of makes you feel young.
Yeah, and I like to feel young.
Well, that's great. Well, it's good to have you, and of course, you have an amazing story. In fact, the interesting thing is that somewhat recently, you've started including in your full name Susan DeFace Washington. There was a point in time when you didn't even want to use the word DeFace, right? Your maiden name?
Yes, that's very true.
And that's because of the shame and all of the difficulties that you faced as a young person growing up. And we want to talk about that. But now you use that name because you're living in reality, in a sense, and you're not ashamed anymore, and you're not afraid to tell your story.
Right, that's true.
So, welcome to Renewal. But let's start back in the 60s and the 70s. Typical middle-class family. Talk about your family, your experiences back then.
Well, my mom stayed home, and my father worked, and I had an older sister named Kathy, who was 10 years older than me, and my brother David was 8 years older. And I think we were just a typical family, you know. I don't really have many memories of my younger life.
And I think there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
At least people tell you that, because you experienced a horrible experience with your brother.
Yes, I was 10, and it was on the 4th of July, and we were down at our lake house at Cedar Creek, and I was getting ready to ski, and a man walked out on our pier, and he bent down to say something to my parents, and they had to carry my mother off the pier. And what had happened is my brother had committed suicide at our home in Dallas. He was 18 at the time and had just graduated from Woodrow Wilson High School.
Was he depressed? Or does anyone know what the situation is?
No one really knows. I've heard maybe it was a girl. You
don't know.
We didn't really talk about him after he died.
And that, of course, is another amazing part of the story because, you know, after his death, you say that your parents shut the doors to his room, never spoke of him again.
Right.
And it was an unspoken rule in your home that you couldn't even bring up his name, pretending that he didn't exist.
Right.
That's unbelievable.
Right.
What happened as a result of that? I mean, that was devastating to your family.
Right. And both my parents started drinking. You know, I was young and naive. I really wasn't sure what was going on. All I knew is that my mother was sleeping more and more, and my dad was staying out later and later. There was really no communication, and my sister was already outside the home. So it was just a very confusing time, and I just remember there was like a knot of fear that started because I just knew things
something
weren't
was
right.
Wrong. Now, as you look back, of course, you say that this started a chain of events that ultimately destroyed your family.
Yes.
And almost destroyed you as well. But you went on. I mean, that's an amazing part that you were able to survive all of this. But let's talk a little bit more specifically about that event and what you saw. And you say you don't remember much before 8, and that's unusual. And I guess they tell you that one reason is because this was such a traumatic thing that maybe you blocked out memories of the past. Talk about that. Any thoughts on that?
I think because, you know, my greatest desire is to have memories before David's death, because I think that's when my family was more of a healthy family unit, but they're just not there, or they haven't surfaced yet. You know, that day, it's so vivid. I can feel the water. I was about to ski, and I remember the drive home, and you know,
your parents were in the car driving.
Mm-hmm. My father.
What was it? Silence or anger or frustration or what?
It was silence. And we rode home with my father's best friend, and It was just silence. And when we got to the house, the doors were shut. I think they had cleaned his room because he shot himself in his room. And I don't remember that. Recently, I talked to the person who lives in my old house, and she said that a neighbor said they tried to bring food over because my brother had died and my father would not receive it. He said, no, we don't need anything. He just completely closed off.
Did they hide this from the public, or was it a public? Did everybody know, or generally speaking, people know that he had committed suicide, or did they not even want to tell the truth about that?
I think people close to us knew, but I don't remember it being talked about. People, like, even now today, people I grew up with said they knew something had happened, but they tried to keep it secret.
So do you remember the funeral?
No. Oh. I remember David in the casket.
And that's
it was
all.
When I picture David, I don't have any memories of him alive. I picture him in the casket.
And something, of course, happened there to you, obviously, psychologically, emotionally, and being able to divorce yourself from that situation, because as we'll learn tomorrow, as we talk about it tomorrow on our program, you went on and you were relatively happy. You worked through mm-hmm. these things in your school, but things were deteriorating at home with your dad and mom. So
yes.
Just summarize what you saw happening. They were silent. They wouldn't talk about it.
Yeah.
Did you ever try to talk about it and they shush you? Or?
Yeah, I was scared to bring it up. I was real scared of criticism from my father, and my mother was just devastated. And so I did not try to bring it up because there was fear about that. And they didn't communicate anymore.
And that, of course, is when they moved downward in terms of alcoholism,
yes.
taking complete control,
right.
trying to medicate themselves, dealing with the pain,
right.
obviously, in that way. But here you are. You're going to go on with life, and you did, and we'll talk about that tomorrow, how you survived this as a 10-year-old on into junior high and high school. My special guest, Susan Washington. Of course, Susan will be back with us again tomorrow to continue to unfold this very painful story. And you'll want to stay with us all this week because even though it's a painful story, some of it you'll have a hard time believing, but there is a good ending. You know, as I was thinking about Susan, as I'm thinking about her story and what happened here, I couldn't help but think about a principle that I included in my new Life Essentials Study Bible. It's a principle that comes out of the book of Jeremiah. It's listed as principle number 33, but I entitled it The Impact of Sin. And here's the principle. When facing what appears to be horrible unfairness, we must understand that when sin entered the world, it impacted all humanity, including innocent children. And we see this story fleshed out in the life of Susan. But you know, Jeremiah was reflecting on the judgment that was going to come on Jerusalem, on Judah, for their sins. The time was up. God was going to bring judgment through the Babylonians. And he recorded this word here in Jeremiah chapter 31, which reads, "This is what the Lord says. A voice was heard in Ramah, a lament with bitter weeping. Rachel weeping for her children, refusing to be comforted for her children because they are no more." You know, one of the most painful results of sin, as I've said, in the world is the way it impacts innocent children. And here, of course, in this Old Testament story, the tragedy resulted from Israel's rebellion against God. Though Rachel, Jacob's favorite wife, was buried just a few miles from Jerusalem, the Lord spoke as if she were alive, watching what was happening. Her bitter weeping resulted from her children's captivity. And of course, I think there's a significant correlation here to little children. You see, Matthew cited this prophecy, and when he did, he was calling attention to the way sin has impacted all human beings. King Herod felt threatened by the wise men's inquiry regarding Jesus' birth as king of the Jews. You remember that in the story there in Matthew chapter 2. When he was outwitted by these wise men, he was filled with jealousy, filled with rage, and he gave orders to massacre all the male children in and around Bethlehem who were 2 years old and under. And in this context, you see, Matthew quoted Jeremiah, these very verses from Jeremiah about weeping over children. And this happened, of course, in the time of Jesus, because a lot of those little boys, their lives were taken. Yes, indeed, sin does impact all human beings, including children. That's one of the great tragedies in life. And we only need to open our eyes to what is happening around us to see that innocent children are abused. They're marred, they're maimed, they're destroyed psychologically and physically because of the impact of sin in the world. They didn't bring it on themselves, but it impacted the parents who indeed inflicted the results of that sin on their own children. This is happening all over the world today, all over the world, including the multitudes of innocent lives that are intentionally and selfishly snuffed out before they are born. Yes, I'm talking about unborn children. I'm talking about abortion, because that is an incredibly sinful reaction to the human condition. Well, though this human condition is appalling, we can take comfort in Jesus' special love for children. I'm reading here from Matthew also. Then children were brought to him so he might put his hands on them and pray. But the disciples rebuked them. And then Jesus said, "Leave the children alone, and don't try to keep them from coming to me, because the kingdom of heaven is made up of people like this." Yes, God has a deep love for children. And you're going to see that in spite of Susan's painful journey as a child on into adolescence and into adulthood, Jesus loved her, and you're going to see God's grace in her life in an amazing way. Yes, it's going to take almost half of her life to work through all of this, including prison time because of what happened in her life, because of her parents' impact on her life. You're going to see an amazing story of God's grace. Yes, Jesus does love children. Sometimes we don't understand it all, but ultimately, someday, we will understand.
We invite you to check out Gene's new Life Essentials Bible, which contains 1,500 principles to live by, from Genesis to Revelation. This new Bible is the first ever multimedia study Bible, which utilizes QR codes to access 1,500 videos of Gene teaching these principles. You can learn more about this Bible by going to our website at renewalradio.org. That's renewalradio.org. Or you can write to us at Renewal, 241 Legacy Drive, Plano, Texas, 75023. Again, that's Renewal, 241 Legacy Drive, Plano, Texas, 75023. Our phone number is 1-800-RENEWAL. That's toll-free, 1-800-RENEWAL. Renewal is made possible by listeners just like you. If you feel led to give to this ministry, you can send your tax-deductible donation to Renewal, 241 Legacy Drive, Plano, Texas, 75023. Or you can call us at 1-800-RENEWAL during normal business hours, or you can reach us anytime at renewalradio.org. Thank you so much for joining us today, and please join us again tomorrow, right here on Renewal.